Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
I know what my spiritual gifts are, Jonathan, and my dominant spiritual gift is ignorance.
Yeah.
That gift gets pervasively used so many different times, and really, it's kind of neat because I am so ignorant about so many things that I depend upon the readers of my blog and also the listeners of this podcast to help me to know what to do sometime. Well, you were with me not too long ago in Arkansas.
I was.
I was at a speaking engagement, and several people came and spoke with me, and one person came up to me and just talked about, they were very complimentary about the blog, and that's to give you a lot of credit.
Thank
you. They had a good layout, and they said the content was okay, and that's to give me a little credit, but mostly you as well. But then he said, my goodness, there's so much content on there. I need help just synthesizing it all. Why don't you do some blog post in the future where you bring together several of the different things you've talked about? So you know what I said to myself? I said to myself, that is a good idea.
It is.
And as a result, just did this 11 common mistakes made by churches, and that's where we will elaborate today.
Yep. Mistake number one, failure to have an informative, easy-to-use website.
Now, I don't think I originally said informative.
No, said easy vibrant.
To use. Yeah, and you called me, and you sent me an email or something and said you didn't like that language. I said, whatever. So I changed it to whatever you wanted. So you changed it whatever you wanted, and it became informative, easy-to-use website. Now, here's the key. Most people will go to a website if they're first-time guests.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go to the website to find out the times of service. They're going to the website to find out the address so they can put it in their GPS or that they can get it navigated out for them. And so if you do not have those critical issues, then they're probably not going to show up in your church. I don't know if you're like me, but if I go to a restaurant, I go to the website, I look what's on the menu, and I decide ahead of time. It's a very similar situation with churches and those who are the guests who are going to visit. If they go to a website and it's poor quality, that's a poor reflection of the church. They go to the website and they cannot find out an address, they're probably not going to look.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow pages do not exist in the mind of most people today. And if they go there and they don't see the worship times and it's not clearly stated, then they're not going to look at it.
Yeah, the first commenter on the post, whenever you posted this, that is exactly what he said. He said he had been to two church websites. One of them had this huge picture of the pastor, but nowhere could they find where it was located or what time they
did
started.
Did you realize you don't have a huge picture of me on the blog?
No, we do have one on Pastors Today, though.
Oh, yeah, that thing's really big. I like that.
Yeah, right at the top.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, and then he said he went to another website, not a big picture of the pastor or anything like that, but just it was really hard to find the worship times and the location of the church.
Isn't it amazing all the money that we spend to get buildings in decent shape, all the money that we spend to communicate our message, and yet we fail to spend sometimes just a few dollars in order to have a good website to tell people where we are and what time our services are.
And they're not expensive. I mean, you know, I do websites, obviously, for you and for a lot of other people, and church websites can be done for pennies on the dollar based on what they used to be able to do. You used to have to have a professional or somebody to do that, and you were spending $2,000, $3,000, and $4,000 a website. You can have your own website up and running for less than $100 today. It really doesn't take a lot, and with the tools and advancements in web design, it doesn't take a lot for you to get things to a decent level of respectability and with the information. And a lot of times people will forgive the visual if the information is helpful.
That's right. Do you have any insights that you could offer the listeners as to what type of platform you prefer?
WordPress.
It's simple, isn't it?
Yes, it's simple. If you're using any kind of hosting service that's one of the mainstream ones like Bluehost or JustHost or GoDaddy, they have a one-click install for WordPress. You're up and running $50-$60 for hosting for a year. You can buy a template for $40 to $50. So less than $100, you're up and running in an hour or two.
That's
and
good.
And it all works. It walks you through everything by itself. So
there's no excuse not to have let's see what you wrote, informative, easy to use website.
Yeah,
I said vibrant because I like to say things concisely.
Well, vibrant's good, but vibrant
can
mean a lot
much.
Of different things to a lot of different people.
Got it.
So and the key for a church website, we've talked about it, you know, this whole time, is make it easy to find on the page right when it comes up, when you have your service, and where you meet.
That's the main two things.
Failure number two is the failure of pastors and staff to be actively involved in social media. I know this is something we've been pushing for the last couple of months heavy on the podcast and the blog.
I don't know if I went dragging and screaming into social media. I think I was a little more receptive than that. It started with my son getting me involved in 2008 in Twitter. Then you and Ed Stetzer are the ones that pushed hard to get me more involved on blogs, and it's grown from there. Social media is the language of the land now. Social media is how most people communicate on an ongoing basis. And there are different forms of social media. There are different mediums of social media. But if a pastor or staff is not involved in some way in social media, what I said there, this is analogous to a missionary in another land failing to learn how to speak the language of the people. You're not being a missionary on your own site.
Now, do you have a platform that you think works better for churches and pastors?
Well, I prefer Twitter.
Yeah.
Because it's concise. You know me, I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. And if I can say something as quickly as possible and I can do 140 characters or less, that's good. A short burst of information is good. But I also recommend strongly that pastors have a blog and that they have a blog that communicates to their church and to their members, even if they're only making weekly entries. I'd prefer more frequent, but that would be the second one.
Yeah, a lot of times I get questions of pastors and church members alike from different churches around the country. What should we do on social media? You know, what do we do? Well, you more than likely have a daily Bible reading plan that you're going through as a church. If you're not, maybe you ought to look into that. But you have prayer requests, you have births, death announcements even, Wednesday night meals. I know down in the South, I don't know about the rest of the country, you'd be more familiar with that than me. But
I thought you were from Alabama.
I am.
Mississippi.
But I'm saying around the rest of the country. Okay. I'm familiar with the South.
Okay.
But Wednesday night meals. What are we having Wednesday night? What's Wednesday night menu? That's an easy tweet, easy Facebook post.
Hey,
that's something that's really important.
Maybe
to a lot
I should
of people.
Do something different and give an example of a son.
Okay. Yeah, we don't do that enough.
Yeah. You want to pick
Hey, Sam, here we go.
Yeah. I noticed that Sam, not too long ago, was about to give his State of the Church address.
Yes.
And so several times each day, he would write a question. Do you know how much our attendance increased? Do you know what the population of Cookeville is? Do you know how many babies mm-hmm. we had? And he kept building up to this is why we're moving by babies, not Sam, how many babies were born into the church.
Sam had one.
He did. He needs to have more. He has two now. And if he's listening to this podcast, two grandchildren from one family is totally insufficient. I'm expecting more. He would just one after another have a little tweet that would go out, and it would be a teaser type of statement for the State of the Church address that he gave on a Sunday night.
Yeah, and I follow Sam on Twitter, and I don't
you
even
have
go to
because you wouldn't know what to talk about when we came to this podcast.
But I was finding myself interested. I don't go to Sam's church; he's an hour away. But I really want to know what happened, so I'm going to have to go find that the podcast of that sermon and download that and see what all's going on there.
I want to find out too.
So
he didn't tell me.
What was a secret?
Well, it's done now.
Yeah, it's true. All right, number three, failure of pastors and staff to understand they represent the church when they're involved in social media. Now, it's one thing to be involved, but you got to be careful with what you're doing online.
I have had the cringe factor more times than not when I have seen what some pastors have put on Facebook or what they've tweeted or certain blogs that they've written. Oh, my goodness. How could they do that? Don't they know that church members are watching? Don't they know that community members are reading? Don't they understand that they're representing the cause of Christ? And then I just say, I just don't get it. Quite frankly, I've known some pastors to lose their jobs because of not doing very well in the social media. I've known some pastors who have been unable to get jobs because they have checked into not only legal background, not only credit background, but they've checked into social media. Pretty easy to do now.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. If you're on a pastor's search committee, you want to find out everything you can about that pastor. If you have a blog out there as a pastor, you better be sure that content is acceptable or, you know, up to snuff.
One of the first things many search committees are viewing these days.
And they should.
Absolutely.
The fourth common mistake you listed was the failure to urge people to be a part of groups. That's within the church.
Yeah, groups within the church. It could be a Sunday school class. It could be a small group. It could be a home group. It could be some type of ministry group. You get the message. But if you connect with groups, then you're more likely to stay in the church. You're more likely to be a better giver in the church. You're more likely to find joy in the church. I quite frankly don't understand churches that do not have a strategic process for getting people from the worship experience to some type of group. It's critical to the health of the church.
So if they don't have that plan to get people more connected from worship into small groups, what would you suggest? How do you suggest they start?
Well, this sounds like a shameless promotion, but rather than go into all the details, I'd recommend they read Simple Church and understand how to go through the process of making a disciple, and that would include getting them into groups.
What about new members?
Well, you are setting me up with all these kind of softballs. That's why I wrote a book called I Am a Church Member, and new members should be going through some type of entry point, where at the entry point, whether it's a new member class or whatever you want to call it, they are told that one of the expectations is you get connected with a small group.
Number five is related to small groups. It's the failure of leaders to be actively involved and influence the content of the groups. And that's not necessarily all the time picking it for them, but at least knowing what is being taught in your groups.
It's both and. Lifeway Research did a study. They found out that 70% of group leaders want guidance. They desire guidance on the content that is there. Many times pastors say, or other leaders in the church will say, I don't want to tell my small group, Sunday school classes, whatever it is, I don't want to tell them what type of content they have because they'll rebel. Most of the time, they want you to know. At the very least, you're exactly right. You need to know what is being taught there. No pastor would let a Sunday come along or any worship day come along and just let a random sermon be preached by someone without having any idea what the content is. More people are involved in small groups, at least collectively, than often are involved in the worship experience.
And as far as curriculum goes for small groups, there are a lot of different options out there.
There are, and of course Lifeway has a lot of options, and we could get into shameless promotion about that. Part of our options are, where do you want to begin?
Yeah.
And you can begin with text, and we have one called Explore the Bible, which begins with Bible text, and it takes you book by book through the entire Bible, all age groups. Another one called Gospel Project. It begins with theology. It begins with the grand narrative of Scripture. And then you can go Bible Studies for Life, which again is biblically based, but it deals with life issues and how the Bible treats those. So we have a plan where you begin with a particular starting point. Is it life issues? Is it the text itself? Or is it theology? And we have a lot of other short-term studies as well, lifeway.com.
And it's not always that you have to have the same starting points for every class. Like if you have a group that's, you know, 20s or 30s and they want to do life starting point, and maybe you have a senior adult group that wants to do a text starting point, that's always an option too. It's not something that has to be systematic throughout the entire church. While that is helpful a lot of times,
I know a lot of church leaders that are also saying, okay, our Sunday morning groups are going to do this plan, but other days of the week are going to do another plan.
If you
plan.
Had a Wednesday night, our church always called them Cross Point University when I was in Alabama, and it'd be more just life classes. Those would work well with short-term studies, 6 or 13 weeks.
Right. Very good.
Number six is the failure of church members to be considerate of where they sit during a worship service.
Worship service is not a movie theater. So... when you go into a movie theater, the favorite place of most people is to
sit in the middle.
No. If it's Nellie Joe and me, it's sit on the aisle.
Oh, really?
So we can stretch out.
I always want to sit in the middle.
I want to get near the middle, but on the aisle.
Okay.
I'm very picky about that.
All right.
I like light butter on my popcorn, but I'm not eating that these days. But that's another story. So... it's not a movie theater. It's a place where you are there to serve and to put others before you. So move toward the middle. Don't just sit on the aisle. Don't spread out. Let a guest look at you and you look them in the eye. And when you do so, they'll know that they're welcome to sit by you. It sounds like a trivial thing, but we hear of people who visit churches consistently who say that they show that they didn't want us there just by the way that they were spreading out all over the pews or chairs.
Yeah, if a person cannot find a seat and struggles to find that in their first attempt to come to a church, I know that's got to be a bad first impression.
It's a bad first impression, so much so they won't return most of the time.
And speaking of first impressions, the failure to have parking lot greeters at
a
church.
None of these issues, well, some of them are more important than others, but these latter ones are not theological heresy.
No.
But they're issues that really can preclude someone from hearing the gospel. Parking lot greeters are so simple. You can have one person out there greeting in a small church, even if they're just waving at them, pointing,
opening the door,
opening the door, whatever. Every church should have a parking lot greeter, because once they get onto the property of the church, that's the place of first contact.
The eighth most common mistake that you've listed here is the failure to have clearly marked guest parking.
I think I told the story, and so I'll be redundant, of I was preaching for a friend, and I told him when I got into the worship center, I said to the pastor, I couldn't find the guest parking. You told me to park in guest parking. He said, yeah, you can. We got plenty of places. I said, no, I couldn't. And so I showed him that he showed me where the guest parking was. And then I said, but you didn't give me any signs on how to get there. And I drove around and around, and I didn't see any signs that pointed to guest parking. He said, well, I never thought about that. I just supposed that they would find it.
Yeah.
I said, I think it filled up pretty quickly with members understanding that guests were not going to be there. So clearly mark guest parking, not just the presence of guest parking.
And clearly mark how to get to it as well, right?
That's right.
And speaking about getting to things, number nine is the failure to have clearly marked entrances to the worship center.
Recently preached in Clearview Baptist Church in the Nashville area, actually in Franklin, Tennessee. I was talking to the pastor, Mark Marshall, and I was complimenting him. I said, I came here and I knew exactly where to go to the worship center, because it's a little bit off the beaten path on the Clearview campus.
At Clearview, you drive up, you would think what you're seeing is the worship center. That's actually the chapel. The worship center's in the back.
It's in the back, not in the front.
It's a multi-purpose type room.
But they have this clearly marked entrances to the worship center. Everywhere you go, there were signs. And so I complimented on him. He said, well, we didn't used to have it. We had Oxano, the consulting group, come in, and they told us that was their experience. They couldn't find the worship center. And so they did these signs, and it's made all the difference in the world.
And I remember the week we were still going there whenever the sign showed up, and the difference it made, even for somebody with a regular tender, I took notice of it.
It looked good, too.
It did.
Professionally done.
It did. Number 10 is the failure to have clearly marked entrances to the church's office.
You know, this is true, and from the small church to the large church. During the weekdays, if someone needs to come to the church for a reason, the first place that they will look, unless they have a specified event, is the church office. So that should be one of the most clearly marked areas. And I don't have hard statistics on this, but I'm going to speculate that about only 1 out of 5 churches have a clearly marked church office. That's a guest-friendly issue that needs to be addressed.
And that doesn't just affect guests, but deliveries, meeting people from outside the community. Say you're a minister and you're going to have lunch with someone, hey, meet me at the church. They don't know where to go whenever they get there.
That's right.
The final mistake made by churches that you listed here was the failure to have adequate restroom facilities. Now, you know about this from your first church.
Well, I know about this from my first church because we had no restroom facilities. I mean, it was... I'm one of these guys that can say my first building program was toilets. we put a small extra facility there, had a little small eating area, but the thing that was just excited everybody is in my little rural church in southern Indiana is we had a women's restroom and we had a men's restroom. And it was, boy, talk about having a groundbreaking for that. That was something different. But yes, it's not only having restroom facilities, having adequate restroom facilities, is having them clearly marked.
Yeah.
It's making certain they're clean. It's making certain that they have easy access. We think about that as a trivial issue and say, well, if people just love Jesus, they wouldn't care about these things. Well, I hope we got some people coming to our churches as well that may not know Jesus. And so these are issues that, as trivial as they may sound, could have ultimately gospel impact.
One of the comments I did see whenever this post went online, somebody had shared it on Facebook and had mentioned that, hey, these are great for large churches, but small churches can still apply. These really just, they apply to every church, not just large churches.
There is nothing in here that is applicable to just one church size. All of these, look, go down them real quickly. Any size church can have a website. any pastor or staff can be involved in social media. They need to use common sense when they're there. You should have groups in any size church. You should affect the content. You should at least know what it is. You should be considerate of where you sit in a worship service. You should have a parking lot grid if you have a church of 10. You should have clearly marked guest parking if you have a church of 20 or 30. You should have clearly marked entrances to the worship center, small or large. Same thing with offices and restrooms.
So applies to every church regardless of size.
Absolutely.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary's Doctor of Ministry program. If you want more out of your ministry, want to study with world-class faculty, and need to stay where you currently serve, the DMIN at Southeastern is the answer for you. Visit sebts.edu/DMIN for more information. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr.
I wish I could give credit to the pastor who asked me to do this. I don't remember his name, but perhaps he's listening to this podcast. Thank you very much. And I always welcome suggestions from listeners and readers about any type of content they'd like to see in the future.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.